AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
God can't bless who you pretend to be or who you compare yourself to. He can only bless you in the lane that was created for you.
I feel that for somebody.
You don't need no edge entity, you need boundaries. What?
I don't need your likes. I don't need your validation. All I need is a God fighting for me that says all things, all things, all things.
Chad. Pastor Stephanie.
Hi, First Lady.
Welcome to the PJ interviews.
So glad to be here.
I'm going Please do. This is our first time doing
it. I know. I'm excited.
I am too. Okay, so like this is just us having girl talk, catching up and understanding what you're learning about yourself and life and your journey to womanhood. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be super, super easy.
Nice. Okay. No tears.
No tears. But do you consider yourself like an emotional person?
You know, it's 50-50. I'm not really. Like, but I am in my private place, you know, like when I'm by myself, I cry a lot. But
really?
In public, it's like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
So PT was telling me yesterday, or it was a couple days ago, I was kind of stressed out. And he was like, maybe you need to just cry. And I was like, I mean, probably. Mm-hmm. He was like, so just cry. And I was like, well, it doesn't really work like that for me. He was like, do you want me to take you to a movie that makes you cry? I don't, do you just like, how do you just start crying in your private place? No.
It's, I think for me, it's like in like moments of like devotion, the time with God and in worship, then I think that's when I actually face certain emotions. Mm. So maybe I just mask it or run away from it. I don't know what it is. But I think every time I'm in my prayer closet, like that's when it's just floodgates.
Have you, like, do you feel like as a child you were allowed to be emotional?
Oh, no. I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't allowed, but I took on the responsibility that I shouldn't.
Really? So why?
It was weird.
Say more.
Yeah, because I was the youngest. And growing up, I saw the pressure on my mom, you know, with the desire to want to be like a great mom. And you don't see that many single parents in Nigeria. And so I felt like if I was always okay, then she would know she's doing great. Mm-hmm. And so I remember till today, if my mom sees me cry, she thinks that somebody died or like, you know, it was just some tragedy. But as a kid, the first time I cried, I filmed myself, which is so weird. And I was like, oh, this is what it looks like. It's so weird. But I just never, like, I always try to be like the person that, okay, if Stephanie's okay and she's the youngest, then everyone else should be fine. But I think for a long time, it took me a while to actually, like, face my emotions.
Mm. So you kind of, like, took on that responsibility of trying to make sure that your mom was okay. But that didn't just come out of nowhere. Can you Tell me a little bit more about like how you came to a place where your mom and making sure that she was doing well became mm-hmm. your priority. Like, what was it that she went through that made you feel like I need to lighten the load on her?
Yeah. She till this day, my mom is just someone who would do anything for her children mm-hmm. and just like absolutely anything. And I think the day that it really hit me, I accidentally found a will she wrote. And I was really confused because I'm like, how old was she when she wrote this? And I had a conversation with her and she told me that right after my dad passed, that she was really scared for her, like for her life, that mm-hmm. the same people that killed him, which was, you know, my dad's family, but they were.
Okay, wait.
Yeah, it was a lot. It was okay, just a whole lot.
Okay, hold on. You just gave us a lot there.
Yeah.
So your dad was killed mm-hmm. by his family.
Mm-hmm.
And your mom ended up fearing for her life.
Yes,
too.
So my dad's cousin planned his assassination, and because they wanted, my dad didn't have a will, and because they wanted to take everything away, because he was in, I mean, he was pretty wealthy, and so they were like, oh, we want to take the house, we want to take everything, and so his brother started threatening my mom and sent her death threats that, you know, if she doesn't turn everything over to them, that he's going to also. That he's going to go after her and basically kill her. Like, it was just very plain. And so she, like, beefed up security, but she let them have a lot of things. And she's just like, I just want my kids to be safe. Like, I'm not trying to deal with all of this. But she was really scared for her life. And so she wrote a will that if anything happened to her, then her sister should take care of her kids.
Mm.
And so when I ran into that, that was it. Like, it really took me out for a second. I'm like, were you like, what was your mindset to write a will and to like, it was just really weird for me. And then when she told me about the whole story, and at the time, my uncle actually sent assassins to the house. But apparently when the assassins showed up, he came with them. And then he leaves the car and tries to, you know, like go to the other side. But someone recognized him and said, oh, where, you know, are you going to like my mom's house, basically? And because of that, like he freaked out that they would identify that he was connected to them, then told the assassins to leave. And my mom found out the whole thing. And it was just like, I just saw the pressure on her, like, okay, if I'm alive, like I need to give my kids everything. But at the same time, I don't know how long I might be here. So I was like, you know what? I want her to always feel that her life, like I, like even if I have to sacrifice like my opinions mm-hmm. or how I feel about certain things, as long as that would make her feel like, no, mom, you're doing amazing. Mm-hmm. That was good for me.
So at what point did you realize that you may not necessarily be living authentic to who you are, but rather trying to put on this mm-hmm. role or persona to make things easier for those around you?
It took me a couple of years. I think it was when I left Nigeria and in college, probably a couple of years even in college. So maybe when I was like about 18. And then I'm by myself and I actually have time to now start, you know, realizing like who I really am and what makes me happy or what makes me sad and being able to express that. Because I was very aware of just like sometimes my emotional state, but not trusting who I could share that with.
Mm.
And I think that was my thing. Because even with friends, I was not a very vulnerable person. And people would always ask, like, oh, you should open up more. And I'm like, I'm all right.
I'm fine.
I'm good. But I just didn't know what was a trusted space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when I started having people around me that I knew that I could trust and say how I actually felt in moments, I think that gave me a lot of healing, like, and freed me a bit.
When's the last time, like, you made a decision to be vulnerable and open up, even if you were, like, doing so outside of your comfort zone?
The last, you know, now I don't know if I can trace it because you've helped me with that too a lot. Mm-hmm. I think even with preaching and watching you and PT, I really just came to a place and I'm like, what am I hiding anymore? Like, what is there to hide? Like, why do I need to hide stories? Or why do I need to hide pain or anything like that? And I think watching you and seeing how vulnerable you are and the power in that, it really gave me a lot of strength to say, you know what? Like, it doesn't matter. So I don't know if I can trace a last time, but I just know, like, now that's my lifestyle, like just to be open and whatever comes with it, you know, comes. But
what comes with it?
I mean, tears that I don't like.
So have you like ever opened up to someone and shared your vulnerability and received a response that made you want to close back down again.
Oh,
so like,
yes.
How do you like, how do you stay open even when you don't get the response that you think your vulnerability will receive?
Yeah. There was, I'm trying to remember what the scenario was. I think it was something maybe with my brother or something. And it was this huge disagreement. And it's weird because like I can catch it better now, but I notice like in moments where like, if I feel like, wow, I just opened up my heart and it was shut down immediately. It's almost like, you know how there are these guys who are just playboys and they're like, oh, you broke my heart. I am never loving again.
I've heard of them.
Yeah. I'm like that almost, not like now, but I used to be like that, like with, just how I express myself. So the moment someone ticks me off the wrong way, I'm like, you know what? That's the last time I'm gonna have a conversation with you.
And then what? So there. Okay. So you could stay there, but there's a step that comes after that. What is that step?
So I think it's like in that moment, I'm in my feelings. That's really what it is. And I think after that, it's really just coming face to face with the fact that, you know, this person is not you, mm-hmm. and they're, whatever they've been through in life or whatnot, how they perceive things does not have to be how you perceive things. And giving myself the grace I give other people.
Mm.
Because I give people so much grace, but when it comes to me, I'm like, oh, Stephanie shouldn't have said that, or shouldn't have shared that. But also giving myself the grace that, you know what, that's okay. Like, we don't have to see things the same way.
Yeah.
And you don't have to receive it the way I would receive it. And so that, I think, was a huge part in that.
And so now you can be open, but you are able to coach yourself mm-hmm. through those moments where you want to shut down.
Yeah.
That's amazing. So one of the things that we've talked about is like being open to all different types of things.
Not wet breath.
First of all, God wants you to be delivered from not enjoying bread being stuck to the roof of your mouth.
Oh, yeah, no.
So, like, before we started shooting, we had a conversation about the power of sandwiches. Sandwiches are powerful, but they are most powerful when the bread is fresh and the bread sticks to the roof of your mouth.
Yeah, that's going to be a divided...
No, God wants to bring healing to that division.
I don't know if you know, even Jesus, you know, when they were breaking bread,
what?
I'm sure those that bread is toasted. I'm sure Jesus was like, wow, it's a hot day. That's why we're going to break bread. So it's not wet. You know?
Just
assuming.
So you're not open to wet bread. I see. But you've had to be open to a lot of things because I've seen your life like completely transform in a short period of time. Yeah. Does it feel like it happened suddenly for you, or does it feel like it was a gradual progress of evolving?
I say both in a way, because on one hand, you know, there are things that you don't realize like until you look up and you're like, oh my gosh, like, you know, and so in those aspects, it feels suddenly. But then when you sit in it, you're like, wow, this has really been a journey. Like this has, like when I, like the moments that I get to reflect from Nigeria, from, you know, the holding on to certain things that God would speak to me about, coming out here, feeling confused, feeling lost, making decisions that I had no clue what it was going to, you know, amount to. And so in those moments, I'm like, wow, this has really been a journey. But the times where you're standing in something that you have believed for a while back, you're like, oh my gosh, this just happened. So in a way, it's like 50-50. It's like a mixture of both.
When's the last time you were standing in something that you couldn't believe?
You know, it was actually a day I sent you a text. I sent you a PT, a text message. And I was like, I was in prayer. And I got this text, and it was some stuff that we're working on with the same room.
Mm-hmm.
And it had to do with like season two. And it just hit me. And I'm like, God, like, there's a lot. Like, you've really pulled me through a lot. Like, you've brought me to a point where, like, when I just look back, I'm like, wow, like, this is crazy. And then I text you in PT because I was really having a moment. I was really emotional. And I was just like, you know, thank you for seeing me. Thank you for, even when I didn't fully see myself, you know, I had glimpses of who I believe that I am. But I think that it really takes people to help you cultivate that.
Todd Delaney has a song and it's called Pulling Me Through.
Yeah.
And he says, like, it was you pulling me through. And it's almost like he gets this revelation after looking back over his life that God was the one who was pulling mm-hmm. him through everything. But the reality is, in the moment, you don't realize that it's God. You're just trying to survive. And then you look back and you're like, wait, there's probably no way I should have survived. Mm-hmm. And like, how did I even have the mentality to reach out to this person or to keep showing up? Like, what was that that was working down on the inside of me? Yeah. And then you come to this realization, like, it was God this entire time. Isn't it funny that we look back on our life and see God? Like, how can we become more intentional about seeing him now instead of in hindsight?
You know, like, I'll even use this example just before answering that.
Sure.
So a family friend of mine was going through, she was, I think she was behind in her car note and just going through all this, you know, stuff in her life. And so she was telling me the story and she's like, hey, could you pray for me? Like, I need to pay my car note. So I asked her, how much is it? And so when she told me the amount, in my head, I was like, oh, I have that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hey, so I told her the next day, I texted her, I was like, hey, I will give it to you so you can, you know, like, you don't have to stress about it. And in that moment, I was like, God, this is like, it was crazy for me because I thought about, you know, the times where God is like, oh, I want you to stay here. Like, this is the place I've called you to. And my family thinks everything is crazy and I'm taking the bus to church.
Yeah.
And, you know, the times where I couldn't afford even to take the bus to church and then to help pay someone's car note.
Mm.
So it was, I think, so to tie that together, I think we are more intentional to see God when we see the things that we can do for people and to see the things like how any time that God can use us to be a blessing to someone. And it doesn't always have to deal with how we give. It could be our ability to say a kind word. And we can think about the times that we needed a kind word or we were dealing with depression or anxiety. And then we're in a moment where we can encourage someone verbally or financially or spiritually or whatever the case might be. But I think that every time that we recognize that the breath in me, I can use that to be a blessing to someone, I see God in those moments. So for me, it's just like, you know, thinking about just the journey of that, I realize like, God, you've really pulled me through a lot and you've been with me this whole time. And so it just goes back that anytime that I could be a blessing to someone, I see God in those moments.
So we're ultimately talking about becoming the hands and feet of God, because so often we're looking for where God is in our life and not asking ourselves, well, how can I show up and be an extension of God in someone else's life? And then you start to see how he works things out on your behalf. I've seen you do that, not just in the lives of people every day, but in the work that you're doing with the same room and how you're invading the culture. How do you maintain your values and morals and what's important to you in a world that has so many different things that could dilute that power and dilute your heart?
Honestly, I think it's because that's really the foundation of my life.
Mm-hmm.
For me, my relationship with God is really my life. I remember there were times where I used to ask myself and I'm like, God, you know, if you want me to just live for you and not get married and not have children, which is crazy, then I would do that. But it's really like I encountered God when I was 9. And so he has been like the reality of my life for so long. And so in anything I do, I don't see it as a struggle to, like, okay, I don't want to be, you know, like, how do I dilute this maybe to please other people? For me, it's always about, like, what is how do I rephrase that question? Like, in the sense of, you know, it's not like me trying to, like, dim my light or dim the word of God, but how do I connect with this person better?
Yeah.
Because I think sometimes when it comes into that space, you have people that can be harsh with their Christianity, believing that, we don't want to dumb down for the Lord and whatnot. But then it's about seeing people as they are, where they are, and how do I have a conversation that can engage you where you are? But in regards to, like, for my personal life, God is the foundation of my life.
Okay, so I haven't always been that way. So it's not like at 9 I had this encounter and I was like, you know what, God, from 9 years old, I just, oh, you are it for me. I was like, you can be a part of what I'm doing in the earth and then we'll get to what you want.
I've had those moments.
Yeah, because I was going to ask you.
No, like, I've had those, because this is how it is. Because, like, I tell someone, right, I knew the Lord as my Father before I knew him as my Savior.
Say more.
So I, like, my encounter with him was like, oh my gosh, like, you're my dad. You know, you're my dad. We're going to do this thing called life together. And so, and the reason I said what I said before is that there's never been an intentionality of, oh, I need to dim my light. Wherever I was, that was my truth. Mm-hmm. And so there were times in college that where I was the person who watched pornography. Where I was the person who loved to go out and drink. And until I almost hit a blackout, but not a blackout, so I'm functional. But,
almost, but it wasn't quite.
Yeah, just a little bit now. But that was where I was. So it was not, there was never the mindset of, oh, I want to adapt to what people are doing. It was just, that was my truth in that time. And I would, and there are times I would be going out and I could hear the Holy Spirit say, don't go out. I'm like, well, you're coming with me or you can stay behind. But that was my truth. So whatever it was my truth in each moment, that was exactly who I was. So when I was the person who just wanted to party, and that was exactly who I was.
Yeah. I think for me, it came down to this idea of, like, I am building a life, but, like, what am I building a life based on?
Yeah.
And for me, sometimes it was like, I just want to prove people wrong about me, or I want people to see me differently, which means the foundation of my life was ultimately brokenness because I didn't want people to see me a certain way. So that's fear, right? Yeah. And so when I came to a place where I was like, I just don't want to be afraid anymore. I don't want people to be, I don't want to be afraid of what people are going to think of me. I don't want to be afraid of what people are going to say about me. So how do I build my life in this place where I don't care whether or not people accept my story and accept my journey? And it had to start with God for me, because I'm like, where, I mean, God, if it's real, if everything I've been raised hearing is real, then you knew these things were going to happen to me. You still made this plan for my life. I'm still here. And so I want to figure out what it is you know about me. And I started building my life curious about what God knew about me. So I started doing the opposite of what my fear told me to do. And that's how I rebuilt the foundation of my life, from it being about fear to ultimately faith. Faith that if I'm still here, there's a purpose for my life. Yeah. And so that role that faith plays in our life can never be underestimated, because it is the thing that leads us to the thing that helps us discover who we are. So I just wonder, what is the thing that you have been most surprised about that was in you all along?
Ah, that's a good question. That's good. The thing that has been most in me.
Because, like, don't you think of all the things you're doing now, there's nothing that you're doing now that you did not have the ability to do before. You just didn't have the revelation that you could do
it. You know, actually, like, you know, connecting those two, I think that it's always been a desire to serve people. And I think that the young girl who wanted her mother to be happy, the way she went about it was not the best, but it was this desire to see someone, you know, in a place, in a state, in a higher place, or wherever they were, like, to see someone do better, like, for something in my life to serve someone. And in the beginning, it was like, oh, I could serve my mom in this way. I remember, like, a lot of times my mom would tell me that even as a kid, there was always this desire of, like, when we would see kids on the street or whatever, like, I would want to give them everything I had. And so I think that deep down, there has always been that. It was always about, like, okay, I really just, I'm like, God, use me to make humanity better in any way. And so it translates now into whether it's as a pastor or speaking or whatever it is, but it really boils down, like, I really love people.
Yeah.
I mean, people can piss you off, but
That's all right.
Yeah, but I really love people. And I think that's what it's always been. And that has been a strength for me, really just through life.
I'll tell you, there were two things I used to get in trouble for all the time when I was young. One was the fact that adults would always tell me their business, like, always. So what I know now is that people have always felt safe being vulnerable with me, even when I was a young girl.
Yeah.
And I used to get in trouble for writing letters about things. I had a nanny at the time who had upset me greatly, and I just started writing in the back of the car after she had upset me. And she went in my own personal journal, wasn't hers, my own personal journal, and found a little something that hurt her little heart. Oh, no. But the thing is, that was my journal. Yeah. But it also taught me like the power of words, like, because writing is like the thing that ultimately changed my life. Wow. And my ability to be vulnerable in writing in a way that I couldn't do with my words. And so those things were always in me. And I think like one of my greatest commitments as a leader is to awaken what's already down on the inside of you, to awaken what God knew when he formed you in your mother's womb and get you to take a chance on pulling that out. What do you think is your greatest mission as a leader, as a spiritual leader?
I believe it's to see people walk out who God called them to be.
For sure.
I really believe that. Because even for me, I think what and to see them do that in a healthy relationship with God, what transformed my life, that like from the person who was just like, I just want to drink, and not knowing that what I was doing in those moments was just kind of to numb things that had pain or whatnot. But it was the love of God in those moments, and the love of God who was to speak to me, the love of God who was to tell me about my life. And I'm like, God, are you talking to me in the club right now? It was crazy. But I think that the love of God really pulled out from me what he already placed within me. And it's so easy to see how easy it is to deviate from your call, to see how easy that could be if you are holding on to pain or you're holding on to your past or any of those things. And so I have my desires to see people really walk out who God has called them to be. And that's why I think, like, I was having this conversation with a friend, and they were asking me about, they were talking about a scenario, like someone who, I mean, it was bad. Someone killed somebody. On the news, it was not something, you know, not like personal.
Well, because you've taken us through a journey.
No, but she was talking about that, and she was saying that, man, that person is a really bad person. And I'm just like, I don't believe they're good or bad people. I just believe there are people who have been awakened to their purpose by God and people that have not. Because any of us could find ourselves in any lane at any particular time, if depending on the journey that your life took and the decisions you made when you got to wherever you were. So I really want to see people walk out who God has called them to be.
And you're doing that every single day. And when you get those testimonies, what does that feel like for you?
It's amazing because there are moments where I'm like, wow, you got that from what I said? I said that?
Are you sure?
Are you sure I said that? But it just shows me the power of the Holy Spirit.
Yeah.
And it shows me the power of how God will partner with you in what you do. And how that can really speak to people, and how whatever, like everything that we're called to do, it really matters on this earth.
So you talked about like God even speaking to you in the club.
He sure did.
Like, how do you know it was God? Like, what does the voice of God sound like?
You know, it sounds just like mine.
But it does. It's not like, people are like, I wonder if God is talking to me. Like, are you talking to you? Because it starts out, it sounds like your voice, he speaks to you in a way that you can understand. And it's hard to explain. I think when I tell people, and I want to hear how you tell people about the voice of God, but I think it starts with worship and vulnerability and being open to whatever's happening in a moment. So when you go to church and you're still kind of like testing it out, or you're listening to worship music and you're like, you know, what's happening here? But like being open to like, what if these words are true? Just for this moment, I want to live like the words in this song are true. You are a good, good father. Like, what would that be like if I honestly and authentically felt that way? And I think that they're able to open up. And the voice of God for me is when you hear your own voice, but it gives you that feeling that you experience in worship. That's the voice of God.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
No, I agree. And I think for me, it goes beyond what I would naturally do in a situation. It goes beyond what I would naturally be inclined to.
Yeah.
And not in a crazy way. Because you do have the scenarios where people do crazy things.
Yeah.
There are
no crazy people.
But there are only people
who have been awakened to their purpose.
That's right. And people who do crazy situations. But I think that it's something that it has that feeling of worship to it. Because, for example, I remember like the one time that was hilarious to me. So I'm in the club and I have two drinks in my hand. I thought I was
both
living,
of them. Both of them.
I was like, oh wow, look at me, double sip. And there was this lady who was like somewhere. She was in the corner, and I heard it so clearly. He was like, "Go speak to that lady and let her know her dad is gonna make it. He's in the hospital right now." And I was like, sir,
now it's not the time
to be talking to people about their fathers. And I remember I walked up to her. I was like, you know what? I'm still functional. And I walked up to her and I was like, hey, I know this is crazy. This is not the place of time. And I said, I just felt like I needed to tell you, you know, your dad is probably in the hospital, but, you know, God is with him. He's going to make it. And she starts crying.
Yeah.
And that was a moment that was healing for both her and me.
Mm.
Because I'm like, God, you are funny. Because this is not the scenario I would think you would use. I would think in this moment, you should be like upset with me, like, Stephanie, what are you doing? You need to get out of here. But even in this place, you can use me for this particular woman. And that to me was just healing and moving, that what if that even in my, like, the moments where I would be hard on myself, the moments where I feel like I should not be here, like, Stephanie, do better. You know, better, do better. But then you start learning, if I could really do better, I would.
Yeah.
But if I don't have the power to get myself out of here, what if that was where I needed to be? What if this woman? So there are things that it just gave me so much. It changed my perspective in life, like the ways God moves. And it's just, it's amazing to me.
I think when you find out that God can still use you, and then you take a step on that. So there are like several steps, right? Like, so one, you have to come to the realization that God can use you in spite of what you've gone through, in spite of what you've done. If you're still here, then God says, I can still use you. You can still be a tunnel for me to do things in the earth. And then you have to come to the place where you're willing to take that step of faith. Like, God, I want to be your tunnel. Now let me actually produce. Let me actually manifest what it is that you've placed down on the inside of me. And then when you see the results of just keeping the channel clear so that he can use you, you feel so honored that he would use you in spite of where you started from. And then I think that that just takes your relationship with God to a whole nother level. And when you begin to honor and value your role as a tunnel and a vessel for God to use in any capacity, it doesn't have to be a huge platform. It could be something just as kind as, you know, saying hello to someone in a grocery store. I think that it restores your worth. Because I struggled so much with my worth and value. And now my worth and value is built on the fact that God sees me and sees me worthy of being used in the earth. And I think that's the most powerful thing that can change your value and your worth, especially as a woman who's on a journey of constantly evolving. Service is everything.
I love that. And I think it heals people when people realize that it's not the good times of your life that counts.
It's not at all.
I think for me that, and that's why now it's like sharing about those moments, there's no shame attached to it. There's no guilt attached to it, because I'm like, no, I needed those moments. I needed to be like, that was part of my story, because, you know, again, I knew better, but I did not have the power to do better. And when I think about how, or the people you met, you know, along the way, or how you can connect with other people because you've been them, then was it ever a waste? Was it ever not supposed to be? Was I ever supposed to be this person that should have been mature enough to know the best way or whatever? But I think it brings so much healing to people when they realize that the moments that you think counts you out from the promise of God is really part of what qualifies you to do what you do.
And we hear that over and over again, but it's really,
it's the truth.
It's so true.
It's like, it's, yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's just like 100, you know, just with the red marks and everything.
As in the emoji.
The emoji.
Your life is an emoji. Can I just say that? What's your favorite emoji?
You know,
can you make the face?
It's the what?
Yes. Mine is the magnifying glass, because that's how I like to look at people. Like, what? What did you just say to me? I enjoy that one thoroughly.
Yeah.
What are you looking forward to? So we're 2020, new decade.
2020.
Yes. What makes you excited?
You know, I think, right, I'm in a space. And so I went to Seattle for a sabbatical. And on my way back, I just had this, it was just this reality. And it's crazy now looking at, you know, the events that have occurred and with, you know, Kobe Bryant and all of that. But I was on the plane and I shared this with a few of my friends, and I had never felt afraid of flying in my life. I've never felt afraid of planes or anything like that. But that moment, it was so, the plane hadn't taken off yet. And I just felt this overwhelming sense of death. And I was so confused. I'm like, God, what is happening? You know, are you trying to tell me something? And in that moment, I heard, like, if I was to take you home, would you be proud of the way you've lived? And I was like, absolutely not, because I feel like there's so much potential in me that I've not even tapped into yet. And that, even my response made me ask myself, like, I'm aware of the potential in me that I've not tapped into yet. Why haven't I also tapped into that?
Yeah.
And I just started thinking about different things that the Lord had placed on my heart. And I heard this, whether it came from me, whether it came from God, but it was this one phrase. And he said, if you ever dumb down how you, the things I've called you to because of people, the best thing they can give you is a speech at your funeral. And I thought about that and I said, God, I want to be everything you've called me to be. Like, I, the reality of that phrase, die empty, really hit me. And I think that I'm in such a space now that I want to be and do everything that God has called me to, and really live in a relentless, authentic way and not back down and not cower down or not be shy about anything. Like, there are things that terrify me. Speaking still terrifies me too now, which will shock people. But just be bold and just live it out. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'll tell you, there was one message that just changed my life, and a message that I preached that I feel like really allowed me to step into another something. And it was Unleashed. And I preached it, I think it was the beginning of 2018. And I just talked about how God had unleashed Peter in all of these different ways. Like, he unleashed his mind, he unleashed his heart, he unleashed all of these different things. But the last thing that he unleashed was his hand, and he gave him the power to perform miracles. And how 2018 was going to be all about God unleashing our hands. You know, we've gone through all these levels, but now it's time to act it out. And I have seen God unleash so many parts of you and so many parts of myself. And I think it's so important to be around people who make you intrigued by what else you can release in
that's
the earth.
Right.
And you are one of those people for us.
And you've done that for me. So thank you.
I love you.
I love
this
you.
This was great. Sandwiches. Now let's have sandwiches.
Oh, no.
Yes.
Let's talk about toasted. Toasted. Flat bread. You know, Ezekiel breads that don't stick on your mouth.
Ezekiel bread,
they don't stick because
because there's nothing in it.
That's right. Because they, you know, even,
do you eat
even the Bible knew it. Wow, that really hit me. That was like an epiphany.
It wasn't an epiphany.
Even the Bible, they also knew that bread should not stick on your mouth.
I don't know about that.
I just want to give it up to the Lord, Jesus Christ.
Are you a healthy eater?
I am.
Except pasta.
Except pasta. And except when I'm eating just because. Sorry, what do they call it? Eating
emotional.
Your
oh, I've been eating my feelings this week.
I would eat all kinds of things.
I think the Kobe Bryant passing and just life has had me eating my feelings this week.
I had pizza and pasta.
Yeah, same night, or you split it up?
Oh, no, it was the same night.
That's fine.
At night.
That's fine. That when you went to sleep, it went to sleep.
Oh,
it's gone now.
It showed up.
You see it? You know where it is?
I sure did.
That's
it showed
fine.
Up.
It's great.
You know. Yeah.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.